Chapter 41. Death Becomes Her. Super Hoop Assailant Vanishes. Article in the Swindon Daily Eye Strain, July 24, 1988. The mysterious assassin who shot the Mallet's team manager has not yet been found, despite a vigorous SpecOps search. "It's still early days in the investigation," said a police spokesman. "But from clothes left at the crime scene, we are interested in interviewing a Mr. Norman Johnson, whom we understand had been staying at the Finnis Hotel for the past week. Asked to comment further on the rumoured link between the attack on Miss Next and a grand piano incident last Friday, the same police spokesman confirmed that the attacks were connected, but wouldn't be pressed on details. Miss Next is still in St. Septic's Hospital, where her condition is reported as critical."
Table 17.
Sorry?
Table 17? You are table 17, I take it?
I looked up at the waitress in a confused manner. A second ago, I had been taking a penalty during a super hoop, and now I was in a cafeteria somewhere. She was a kindly woman, with a friendly manner. I looked at the table marker. I was table 17. Yes?
You're to go north side.
I must have looked confused, because she repeated it, and then gave me directions. Along the concourse, past the Coriolanus will-speak machine, up the stairs, and across the pedestrian walkway. I thanked her and got up. I was still dressed in my croquet gear, but without mallet or helmet, and I touched my head gently, where I could feel a small hole. I stopped for a moment and looked around. I had been here before, and recently. I was in a motorway services, the same one that I had visited with Spike. But where was Spike? And why couldn't I remember how I got here?
"Well, looky what we have here," came a voice from behind me. It was Chesney, this time wearing some sort of neck brace, but with a bruise on the side of his head where I had kicked him. Next to him was one of his henchmen, who was minus an arm. "Chesney," I muttered, looking around for a weapon. "Still in the soul reclamation business?"
"And how?"
"Touch me and I'll knock your block off."
"Ooh," said Chesney. "Don't flatter yourself, girlie. You've just been called to Northside, haven't you?"
"So?"
"Well, there's only one reason why you go over there," replied Chesney's sidekick with an unkindly laugh.
"You mean..."
"Right," said Chesney with a grin. "You're dead."
"Dead?"
"Dead. Join the club, sweetheart."
"How can I be dead?"
"Remember the assassin at the super hoop?"
I touched the hole in my head again. "I was shot."
"In the head. Get out of that one, Miss Next."
"Landon must be devastated," I murmured. "And I have to take Friday for a health check-up on Tuesday."
"Ain't none of your concern no longer," sneered Chesney's sidekick, and they walked off, laughing loudly.
I turned to the steps of the pedestrian footbridge that led towards the north side, and looked around. Oddly, I didn't feel any great fear about being dead. I just wished I'd had the chance to say goodbye to the boys. I took the first step on the staircase, when I heard a screeching of tyres and a loud crash. A car had just pulled up outside the services, jumped the curb, and collided with the rubbish bin. A large man had leapt out and was running through the doors, looking up and down in desperation until he saw me. It was Spike.
"Thursday!" he gasped. "Thank heavens I got to you before you went across."
"You're alive?"
"Of course. It took me 2 days of driving up and down the M4 to get here. Looks like I was just in time."
"In time? In time for what?"
"I'm taking you home."
He gave me his car keys.
"That's the ignition. But the engine starter is a push button in the middle of the dash."
"Middle of the dash, okay. What about you?"
"I've got some unfinished business with Chesney, so I'll see you on the other side."
He gave me a hug and trotted off towards the newsagents. I walked outside and got into Spike's car, grateful that I had a friend like him
who knew how to deal with things like this. I'd be seeing Friday in Landon again, and everything would be just hunky-dory. I pressed the starter, reversed off the rubbish bin, and drove towards the exit. I wondered if we'd won the super hoop. I should have asked Spike.
Spike!
I stomped on the brakes and reversed rapidly back to the services, jumped out of the car and ran across the footbridge leading to the north side of Dauncey Services. Only, it wasn't the north side, of course. It was a large cavern of incalculable age, lit by dozens of burning torches. The stalactites and stalagmites had joined, giving the impression of organic Doric columns supporting the high roof, and snaking amongst the columns in the boulder-strewn floor was an orderly queue of departed souls who had lined up, ready to cross the river that guarded the entrance to the underworld. The lone ferryman was doing a brisk trade. For an extra shilling, you could be taken on a guided tour on the way. Another entrepreneur was selling guides to the underworld, how best to ensure that the departed soul went to a land of milk and honey, and for the more dubious characters, a few helpful hints on how to square yourself with the big guy on Judgment Day. I ran up the queue and found Spike, 10 souls from the front.
Absolutely no way, Spike.
Shh, said someone ahead of us.
Nuts to you, Thursday. Just look after Betty, would you?
You are not taking my place, Spike.
Let me do this, Thursday. You deserve a long life. You have many wonderful things in front of you.
So do you.
It's debatable. Battling the undead was never a bowl of cherries. And without Cindy...
She's not dead, Spike.
If she pulls through, they'll never let her out of jail.
She was the window maker.
No. After the shit I've been through, this actually seems like a good option. I'm staying.
You are not.
Try and stop me.
Shh, said the man in front again. I won't let you do it, Spike. Think of Betty. Besides, I'm the one that's dead, not you.
Security!
A mouldy skeleton holding a lance and dressed in rusty armour clanked up.
What's going on here?
I stabbed a finger at Spike. This man's not dead.
Not dead, replied the guard in a shocked tone.
The queue of people all turned around to stare as the guard drew a rusty sword and pointed it at Spike, who reluctantly raised his hands and, head shaking sadly, walked back towards the footbridge.
"Tell Landon and Friday I love them!"
I yelled at his departing form, suddenly realizing that I should have asked him who'd won the super hoop. I turned to the queue behind me that snaked amongst the boulder-strewn cavern and said,
"Does anyone know the results of Super Hoop 88?"
"Shh!" said the man in front again.
"Why don't you poke your shh up your—"
"Oh, hello, Mr. President." As soon as he recognized me, Formby gave me a broad, toothy grin.
Miss Next. Is this that theme park again?
Sort of. I was glad that the trip across the river led up as well as down. One thing was for sure. Unless there had been some sort of dreadful administrative mix-up, Formby was certainly not bound for eternal torment within the all-consuming flames of hell.
So, how are you?
I asked, momentarily lost for words when confronted with the biggest and last celebrity I would be likely to meet.
"Pretty good, lass. One moment I was given a concert, next thing I was in the cafeteria ordering pie and chips for one."
Spike had said he'd driven for 2 days to get me, so it must be the 24th, and, as Dad had predicted, Formby had died, as he had been meant to. Performing for the Lancaster Regiment veterans. My heart fell as I realized that the days following Formby's death would mark the beginning of World War III. Still, it was out of my hands now. The boat arrived for the ex-president, and he stepped in. The ferryman pushed the small craft into the limpid waters of the river and dropped his pole into the dark waters.
"Mr. Formby, isn't it?" said the ferryman. "I'm a big fan of yours. I had that Mr. Garrick in the back of my boat once. Do you do requests?"
"Oh, aye," replied the entertainer. "But I don't have me uke with me."
"Borrow mine," said the ferryman. I do a bit of entertaining myself, you know.
Formby picked up the ukulele and strummed the strings.
What would you like?
The ferryman told him, and the dour cavern was soon filled with a chirpy rendition of We've Been a Long Time Gone. It seemed a fitting way to go for the old man who had given so much to so many, not only as an entertainer, but as a freedom fighter and elder statesman. The boat, Formby, and the ferryman disappeared into the mist that drifted across the river, obscuring the far bank and muting the sound. It was my turn next. What had Gran said? The worst bit about dying is not knowing how it all turns out. Still, at least I'd got Landon back, so Friday was in good hands. Miss Next? I looked up. The ferryman had returned. He was dressed in a sort of dirty muslin cloth. I couldn't see his face.
You have the fare.
I dug out a coin and was about to hand it over when...
Wait!
I turned around as a petite young woman trotted up out of breath. She brushed the blonde hair from her face and smiled shyly at me. It was Cindy.
I'm taking her place, she told the ferryman, handing over a coin.
How can you? I said in some surprise. You're almost dead yourself.
No, she corrected, I'm not. And what's more, I pull through. I shouldn't, but I do. Sometimes the devil looks after his own.
But you'll leave Spike and Betty?
Listen to me for a moment, Thursday. I've killed 68 people in my career.
So you did do Samuel Pring.
It was a fluke, but listen, 68 innocent souls sent across this river before their time, all down to me. And I did it all for cash. You can play the self-righteous card for all I care, but the fact remains that I'll never see the light of day when I recover, and I'll never get to hold Betty again, or hug Spike. I don't want that. You're a better person than me, Thursday, and the world is far better off with you in it.
But that's not the point, surely, I asked. When it's time to go...
Look, she interrupted angrily, let me do one good thing to make up for 0.25% of the misery I've caused.
I stared at her as the skeleton in rusty armour clanked up again.
More trouble, Miss Next?
Give us a minute, will you?
Please, implored Cindy. You'd be doing me a favour.
I looked at the skeleton, who probably would have rolled his eyes if he had any.
It's your decision, Miss Next, said the guard. But someone has to take that boat, or I'm out of a job, and I've got a bony wife and two small skeletons to put through college.
I turned back to Cindy, put out my hand, and she shook it, then pulled me forward and hugged me tightly, while whispering in my ear, Thank you, Thursday. Keep an eye on Spike for me. She hopped quickly into the boat before I had a chance to change my mind. She gave a wan smile and sat in the bow as the ferryman leaned on his pole, sending the small boat noiselessly across the river. Against the burden of her sins, saving me was only small recompense. But she felt better for it, and so did I. As the boat containing Cindy faded into the midst of the river, I turned and walked back towards the pedestrian footbridge, the south side of the Dauncey services, and life.